This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
I'm Mark Lintonmeyer, bringing the philosophy to the table today.
And I am Mary Hines, and I believe someone ordered the charcuterie board of improvisational techniques.
Yes, thank you. I've been the board. I think that's the best way, right? Treading the boards, getting the boards out. You got to do something with the boards.
You got to get some wood in your life. I don't even know. See, that's the thing about improv. Like, I don't know. I work so hard to not filter myself or hold myself back that sometimes things come out and you're like, oh.
Yep. Oh. So we Too have funny. Just had two fine guests on, professionals from the improv and philosophy land. And so this is our interim episode to kind of reflect on those things and maybe keep moving forward in our co-tutory whatever relationship. And I'm realizing that when you were asking me for a definition of philosophy in our very first meeting, I believe, I didn't bring up argument, which is often taken as like, it's not just thinking clearly and broadly about important things. It's coming up with arguments in defense of those views. So lots of people have a philosophy. Can people defend their philosophy with arguments? Well, that's sort of, you know, one of the things that the professionals would say, oh, okay, that's what makes you an actual philosopher.
Interesting.
Any first reactions to that? Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, my first something that I've been focusing on in my work lately is not feeling the need to show or perform what I know to be true, and to instead embody it in thought, word, and action. So my first response when I hear, and it totally, like, sure, this is part of the soup, I get it. But when I hear that, like, the argument is an important piece to it, part of me is like, why? Why does it need, I guess my thought here is, why does it need to be argument, right? Why does it need to, because that seems to have like a lower vibration, you know, I have to argue, I have to prove myself, as opposed to like adversarial, right? There's the word. I was going to say pugnacious was the word that came up, which
I
is
like
such
that
a fun
word too.
Right? That's a fun one. And it makes me think of pugs, and I love pugs. So yeah, I guess my question is, does it have to be pugnacious and argumentative?
First, definitely not. And then why did I not bring this up the first time? Well, because I feel like the argument is between you and you. The argument is between abstract positions that you are considering. If there's another person there who, you know, can represent one of the positions, maybe knows more about it, has spent more time with it, has internalized it, can give you extra data, that's great. But I don't really like, and I don't tend to have guests on that I know are hyper partisans of a view. Like, there are certain philosophers like Ayn Rand who people really like Ayn Rand when they like Ayn Rand. And they think that Ayn Rand really got it right and are not really interested in what other philosophers have to say often. And so I just find that really depressing. And like, that's not what philosophy is supposed to be at all. And but the same can be, you know, even for people that, I don't know, I just don't necessarily like to have people that feel like they figured it all out or are going to present themselves as if I'm coming, these are my views.
Yeah, they're not really fun at parties. Don't go by the punch bowl. Bob is feeling pugnacious. And he's Bob's by the punch bowl like, the only thing is fruit juice and this is all wrong. I don't know why I made Bob such a golem.
Well, yeah, because that's
my pretzel mix.
It's the narrowness and the obsession that characterize it. You know, that the of course, there's the famous, you know, the most famous Socrates quote.
Tell me.
The only thing that I know is that I know nothing.
Sure, I know that one.
Which is, which is an exaggeration. He knew lots of things.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the fact that you're always, well, I guess this is a question. Should you always be open to an argument to the contrary, to any position you've ever held?
This is a great, I'm so happy that we're having this, and I'm so happy that people are joining us for, you know, as we follow the trail into the forest of curiosity. Ah, the forest of curiosity. I recently had a conflict with someone who had a very strong, stark point of view. and it had to do with my home life, and they were immovable. And so immediately I felt my amygdala flare up, my heartbeat start racing. I was able to witness in myself, you know, all of the, I have been wronged, I am being controlled. Like, you know, I was witnessing that come up, and I stimulated my vagus nerve, in for four, out for six. I was breathing. I was able to identify, I am feeling controlled. And I was able to like soften myself through that peak of that like anger moment. And then I was able to lean back further once I had like de-escalate, you know, release the pressure valve and like lean back. And I'm like, what is their point of view? Where are they coming from? Where am I coming from? Where can we strike an accord? So I could have easily made it a really, I could have added logs to the fire and everyone would have burned. But instead I was like, what can I learn here? Like, how can I adapt? So I say that as an example of like, it's important to be open. And then it's also important to know when you've stepped back far enough and you've offered enough territory to where you have your back against the wall. And like, this is something, I'm not moving from here. So you're going to have to dance with me.
Well, and you're also pointing out, you know, why I don't like to see even arguments as between two different
people. So it was between myself is my point.
Yeah,
like,
yes,
it was like,
yes,
that, she presented something, but then it was about me and
right,
my own
right.
battlefield.
That you know, especially somebody who has a really strong point of view can be really useful after they're out of the way, after they're out of the room. You've already heard what they had
get
to say.
Get over there with your point of view.
And you can think about it and maybe you come out of it and like, all right, actually, so I like listening to podcasts. I listen to a couple conservative podcasts, which are not, I'm not conservative at all, but I like, if they're reasonable, I like just being able to sort of let this percolate and see if there's
sure.
Okay. And I see, okay, that's a big blind spot, but I don't actually have to deal with those people ever. don't care.
You can turn them off.
Yes.
Exactly.
I can fast forward. I can say this is tedious.
Yeah.
In a move with another person, especially if it's, you know, somebody confronting you about your home life or something like that, you're not just arguing some abstract issue. It's usually as a philosopher, you know, I'm very much, oh, let's consider both sides and I'll weigh the arguments. And a musician friend of mine quite a while ago was saying, you know what, when it's two people arguing personally about like, what are we going to do? It comes down to some, like, I don't feel respected. It comes down to some like personal, you're not actually even arguing about the thing. So it's really hard to, for instance, I found subsequently to, if I'm like meeting a new musician and I want to convince them, actually, we should just play the songs I wrote because I think they're way better than the songs that you wrote, which are full of cliches and you're a good guitarist, but like, you know, come on, like just acknowledge.
But my songs are better.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Play your great guitar on my songs.
Yeah. But you can't argue that in any sort of objective way. There's no winning strategy for that. If they want to be a songwriter and you don't like what they do, you just have to say, oh, well, I would love to have you come and play at a session, but like, we just can't be, I know that's the core of you.
Right.
Do similar dynamic things come up? I don't know. Are there improvisers? Obviously, if you're just improvising once with somebody, you could probably adjust.
Well,
but like,
actually, great. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Finish your question.
If you're like trying to do an improv group with some, like, are there these dynamics and difference in philosophies?
There sure are. There 100% are. And I have most recently experienced something along those lines. I auditioned to be placed onto a house team at an improv company. And we were randomly assembled. We had never met previously. So there's now like 8 of us, perfect strangers, linked because a group of people saw something in each of us to put us into an ensemble together. And I wanted nothing but positive, lovely, like, I know that I'm a powerhouse. I also know that I'm always learning. There's always ways to improve. There's a habit I can drop that no longer serves, that doesn't make me a nice player in the sandbox, that I can let go, right? So I am humble and also powerful, right? And those two can exist at the same time. There was one particular person who I did not get along with. And I found myself repeatedly feeling very uncomfortable being on stage with them because of how they played. And they are a much younger person. I don't know their whole level of experience, but it really boils down to I initiated a conversation in rehearsal. I asked the person, are you aware that the majority of your choices on and off stage are negative or negating? And she did not take it well, was like, I don't think that. Oh, I'm totally taken aback. Like, no, I don't think that. I think I'm funny and I don't think I need to change. So I took a breath. And I kept myself calm throughout while inside everything was screaming and I felt physically ill with anxiety for having to even talk about this. But my thought is we don't change unless we know that there's something to change about. And I cannot change someone if they don't want to change. So my reply to her was, okay, thank you for telling me what I need to know. I do think you're funny. And if this is how you choose to improvise, then I don't believe I'm able to continue improvising with you. So I had to make a very difficult decision and remove myself from that dynamic. So yeah, it happens. It's a pretty common thing to have those kind of clashes. But it's, you know, how you deal with it.
I mean,
yeah, right?
You hope, one hopes that this person, even though defensive in the moment, would, as time goes on, get the idea, especially if they get this, if this message from multiple people.
Sure. And it was, and someone else had left the same team a week earlier for the same reason. So now this person, let's call them Bob. Bob at the Punch Bowl. Bob Gollum at the Punch Bowl. So Bob, now it's not my responsibility anymore. Bob can choose to change or choose not to change. However, in that capacity where I am actor in an ensemble, any of my teaching coaching expertise is not welcome in the room. And so if my leadership is not welcome, I am not in a place to help you change because that is not my job in this application. You can be who you are. That's swell. But I can't be who I am if you, you know, like, it's, yeah. Yeah. And also, I had to spend a lot of time being okay with that and not worrying, are people talking about me? Did I make the right choice? I know I made the right choice because I was feeling physically ill every time I had to see that person. So my body, because we talked earlier about what information your body, I was getting migraines and stomach aches and I was like, don't think this is good for me. Or good for them, right? Like it's transactional.
So I think maybe this whole transportation situation we have worked out is not optimal for me. That I, you know, as a swimming, as an amphibian, I understand I can cross rivers and things, and you're small, you can be on my back, but you just keep stinging me. And
here's the thing. I know that it might feel like I'm stinging you, but I am a suckerfish. And if I'm going to remove the parasites from your epidermis, there will be a sensation. You say the sensation is a sting, right? But it's really just, I'm just sucking off your parasites, my guy.
I mean, that's what the scorpion said to me. And
Jerry,
I didn't buy that either. I didn't buy that.
Well, you know, sometimes if you have toxins in your body, you know, you're not able to release them by eating all like the algae that you eat. Sometimes more, you know, invasive procedures are necessary. So I don't think Jerry's a bad guy for stinging you. I think he's just trying to help.
So you think this is not just something that you like to do. You think this is actually helpful to me to be stung and sucked at and have things pierce my skin on a regular basis.
Listen, you remember that one time that your foot got stuck underneath the rock?
Yeah.
And you had to just snap it off, remember?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while to grow back, but
it did grow back, Raphael. May I call you Raffy?
Oh, of course.
We're friends. Raffy, it grew back. And I gotta tell you, your right foot has never, It's never been more glossy and gorgeous. Everyone's talking about it in the lake.
I was hoping to impress that baby beluga in the deep blue sea there.
Oh, I hate to tell you, but she might be a little bit out of your league.
I mean, she is much, much larger.
She's so smart. Have you seen the dome on her? Oh, she's so smart.
I'm so small, I could probably just perch upon her back and have her carry me.
With permission and consent. And then I'll perch on your back, and then we'll all have a great time. So you know what? What do I know? I'm like a close to single cell organism. I think I got like 3 cells or something. So what do I know? You go after Sheila.
All right. Well, I think if you want to keep doing the sucking, as long as I understand that that's, as long as you understand that you're doing it for your benefit and that I don't, I guess it's not as annoying as Jerry stinging. And your nature.
I'll be more gentle.
Okay.
I'll be more gentle.
Okay. And if I do end up up with the whale, you gotta stop sucking this. I'm not doing this sort of menage a suck.
Listen, I'm so happy to float up. Oh, you know, if you and Sheila hit it off, and you want to flap flukes together, in the proverbial sense, because you don't have a fluke.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you're not that evolved, and neither am I.
We can evolve now.
That was delightful. See, what a great example of using improvisation as healing and satire and commentary. I've been focusing so much on that lately, the power that comedy has to be smart comedy.
I mean, as an improv
that was smart.
It's time to stop and do some ad reads, and I want to tell you about Masterclass. The time I most like to watch Masterclass is when I have to come up with some content to read an ad to you. But I have also watched it other times, many other times. After all, it's got over 200 classes taught by the world's best entertainers, writers, politicians, business leaders, chefs, and more. It's got classes on both improv. There's a new one there from Amy Poehler and philosophy, like one by distinguished Cornel West. And yes, you can hear a lot of these people in other places, but Masterclass is going to force them to put their content in very nicely shaped bites, beautifully shot video, or like me, you can just go with the audio. You can listen to it at a high speed, like a podcast. But it's not just like a podcast. There are typically class resources, like a class guide, some kind of handout, some kind of study thing. There is an AI class TA. There's a place in the app to take notes on what you're hearing. So it's really a nice mix and match between the quality and formality of a class and the convenience, the sliceability, the chase your interest from this thing to this thing to this thing that you associate with the internet. Plans start at $10 a month to build annually, and you get unlimited access to all the classes to access from whatever device you'd like. Your phone, your laptop, even your TV. You can download classes to watch offline. And 2 things you got to know. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. 88% of surveyed members feel Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives. 2nd, there's no risk. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/improv for the current offer. That's 50% off at masterclass.com/improv. masterclass.com/improv.
So did you know that my expectation, given just that old story, was that you would be a scorpion? I had not defined that, or was that... So were you defying expectations, or you just didn't even know what I was gesturing at?
So I did not know.
Okay.
I think that's one of the key elements of an improvisational scene. Like, we are stepping out from the back line together, creating a new reality. Anything and everything is all raw potential. So if you have a specific idea where you want to endow me as a Scorpio, which is a gorgeous gift, then you get to say in some way that I am a Scorpio, a scorpion.
Scorpio, Scorpio.
Sorry, I just went to an astrology show and it's Scorpio season and the full moon. So Freudian slip. So do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes. And so that has been, as we sort of demonstrated and discussed a little bit in the episode before last, where I have these not just I want to be this character, but I have this whole sort of like the idea is this whole sort of setup that I want to put all the board. And I got to just resist that and just have a seed of it and have a simpler thing.
Yes, because that is true improvisation. You have brilliant ideas. You're smart and funny and fabulous. I wouldn't be here if I didn't think so, and our listeners wouldn't be listening. But it does not serve us together if one of us brings in our big, beautiful, brilliant idea. I was doing improv in New York, and I was working with the late, great Gary Austin, founder of the Groundlings. And he was known for, you know, he knows what he wants, and he knows who he is, and he can be pretty barky about it when... Well, past tense, but I always feel like he's with me because I carry the torch of his teachings because he was such an important mentor to me. And I was up there improvising and he yelled at me, "Mary, what are you doing? You're not playing with anyone. You might as well be masturbating up there." And it was the first time anyone talked to me like that. And it shook me. I mean, I still remember it to this day. During our break, I went out into the streets of New York City, like to go for a walk to get some food with my friend, Caitlin Kale Vanitum. And I yelled and I screamed. I was like letting it out. I was like, "How dare you? Like, that was so insulting. Like, blah, 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 blah." And then the tourists were walking by and they looked at us in fear. And Kale goes, "It's okay. We're actors." And they all like smiled and nodded and... So I say that to say that story, and also don't masturbate.
I mean,
to use that analogy. I'm sorry, everyone. I don't know why I'm so blue.
There's a time
today.
And place.
Time and place. Time and place. Oh, God bless me. But you see my point. Right. And another point to that, too, is like, great, Scorpio. When you go into a scene and you have a great idea, and then it starts going in a different direction. The next challenge there is to immediately drop your great idea for our great idea. A scorpion is now completely irrelevant because you are a salamander. I never really stated that. I think we alluded to it.
I just said I was amphibian. I was supposed to be a frog.
Right.
Maybe that is partly why the frog and the scorpion, "Oh, I can't help but sting you. It's my nature. I promise not to sting you." That whole thing. Is that familiar?
Great. You said amphibian.
I was getting there.
So amphibian is a gift, right? Because now it gives, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like by saying I am a frog, that is offers in improvisational scenes as nutrient rich gifts, right? Saying you're a frog, like that is a really big gift. To me, it's also a big gift to just say amphibian because ooh wee. Now I get to discover what kind of amphibian you are. So, but that's how, I love improvising. I love doing it. It's like Italian food. Like it's like pasta by any other shape is still pasta and I enjoy them all.
Well, and I did not immediately drop it. I still had the scorpion in our shared world.
You held on to the scorpion
so that
energy.
I could talk about, you know, our relationship as a variation, something that had been scarred by that past experience.
But because you said scorpion, you know, that gave me the gift to discover that, because I didn't know what I was yet, but I'm something in relationship with you. So this is where improvisation is about being intelligent and using your skill sets. I love animals. I love animal facts. Great. I'm a parasitic suckerfish. Awesome. I got to that because you were saying something like scorpion, like something like invasive, right? So I was like, oh, okay. Suckerfish is kind of adjacent to that in my brain. It seemed adjacent at the time.
I guess there are improv games where someone, whether it's someone in the scene or the audience or the MC or whatever, assigns you something. We had our philosophy guest 2 episodes ago tried to get us to like be on the debate team for a second and like and tried to get us to argue pro and con. And your immediate impetus was, I thought something that was better and funnier than that, which is we were talking about affirmative action. Like, well, the important thing is how people look like that. I think like to give a silly version,
right.
But he didn't, that didn't.
That day was not a particularly fabulous mental health day for me. So I wasn't on full bandwidth, right? Uh-huh. Like I was working hurt that day. So I also tend to not enjoy arguments. And like, I like to stay in a more like whimsical place. To me, improvisation, it's about like showing real human life on stage, but particularly the real human life I love is a little bit lighter. So given those variables of me not being tip top and having like so much politically charged content, I kind of went into panic mode, which froze my ability to access inspiration and like craft forward.
Well, are there legitimate improv games where it is something sort of where somebody says, okay, you are the frog, you are the scorpion, you know that story, do a variation off it or something like that? Or is that, obviously anything's possible in an improv game, but is that?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure people do that. Yeah. Like endow someone, you are the this, you are the that, off you go.
Or yes, the other, what I thought we would be doing in terms of role playing, because he had a lot of practical ethics in his book, was the kind of thing that people do, not necessarily improvised, but for like a school assembly or a sexual harassment seminar. Like, let's role play. We're at work together and you sure are sitting on that chair really nice. And then you have to figure out how.
That's a little bit inappropriate. The way that you said that makes me feel uncomfortable.
I just was talking about how the chair is ergonomically proportioned to you.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for clarifying. If that was your intention, then maybe pause, take a breath, consider the impact of the things that you have to say in the workplace.
I will only comment on the chairs when there is somebody that I don't at all find attractive sitting on them. And then I can clarify that even though I wouldn't give your ass a second look on that chair, it's going very well. How's that?
Thank you for the compromise, Carl.
So that would be the kind of thing, I guess.
I've had to watch a couple harassment videos, two or three in my day.
Yes. And I guess if you have and part of that is just like, if you have a point you're trying to make. So that's what, you know, our philosopher friend was trying to have us illustrate some point that he was trying to make, but use our little mouths to do that. And that's kind of not as fun as an improviser.
And you can't expect someone to know what you're talking about unless you make it specific and explicit. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what I don't know until I know it. And neither do you.
Right. Unless it's a training exercise. In other words, you're going to say something instead of supporting you and building off you. I'm going to say, say it
correct.
Again.
And then you
say it a different way.
You're in the safety of those rules, right?
Yeah.
You're able to do that exercise knowing the rules.
So to back up a little bit, right? I had asked earlier on, should you always be open to challenging any of your beliefs? And I sort of think, in the abstract, yes, but if you run into somebody who's super anti-trans, mm-hmm. you're not going to like in that moment,
correct.
Humor them. Like that doesn't help because it is again, sort correct. Of a social, I don't want to say a social game, but you know, you're making social moves. You don't want to encourage them, but still like in your own brain, you want to, for anything, build up the best steel man, the arguments on both sides, if there even is a both sides, and so many things mm-hmm. that you don't want to question, like, should I admit that maybe Jews run the media? Like, no, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. That's not a serious that's not a serious thing. You could sort of do an anthropology of why are people anti-Semitic? Like, where does that come from? Mm-hmm. Oh, because they're reflecting on their powerlessness and their scapegoat. You know, you could come up with some
stereotypes,
but they're like, not. Yes, they're, but they're not. It's not you're not stacking those arguments against. but you might want to say behind everybody's position is a legitimate concern, even if the mm-hmm. position itself is ridiculous. Like feeling powerless is not a good thing. So is there some way to address that?
I feel like it all requires listening deeper. And it also requires you. It is a requirement of one to also be able to know how to cool their own temper, to breathe, to be calm, to be level-headed. it requires a lot of awareness and maturity to have conversation around those difficult topics. And I find if someone is not capable of that, then I don't have the time or the energy to do the emotional labor to educate them. Unless you want to pay me Venmo or Zelle, I'll gladly take Cash App as well.
Yeah, there are certain people in my personal life that I don't discuss certain things with because they're just going to get so irritated. They're just going to get so worked up that, like, I just wanted to sort of think about the pros and cons here. Like, but you know, this is very close to you. And so, you know, maybe this is not the relationship to explore this with.
Sure. That's real.
I feel like I've been going in our conversations. I've been going to the well of ways that I was hideous about, you know, to girlfriends when I was 22 or something.
I just love the word choice of hideous. That's beautiful. Sorry, keep going. I love
book/film Brief Conversations with Hideous Men.
I don't know, but wow.
Yes, look it up. It's a good film.
To be a little kinder to yourself, like, you didn't know better.
Right. So,
or maybe you did. I don't know. Maybe
when I met my wife, the woman who is now has been my wife for many years.
My wife.
I had just gone through sort of a slightly traumatic, mostly unrequited, let's be friends pseudo relationship that was like a year long, and I wrote a whole book and an album about it. And so for me, I just saw relationships as I should be able to talk about anything. And so, of course, I should be able to talk to you, my new girlfriend, about how upset I still am on an ongoing basis about my old girlfriend. And no, that doesn't.
Yeah.
That's a little selfish. That's a little selfish. You could find somebody else to talk to that about that.
Too. Sure. See, there it is. Find someone else to talk. Yeah. Yeah. Bless. But also, I mean, that's a good point. Like, you know, you want to let someone in, you want to be vulnerable and available, and you also want to be able to, like, ping pong this back and forth and heal from it. But also mad respect to your now wife, who should be like, I don't want to hear that. Find someone else. Get a journal about it. I'm not the one. I am not the wife you are looking for. I did a little Jedi finger sweep for everyone, if anyone who didn't catch the kind of sort of reference.
And you've mentioned astrology a couple times, and that's one of the kinds of things that I feel like my opinion about that is pretty settled, such that it probably would not be too interesting on a podcast to sort of debate whether astrology is true.
I have a great story to speak to that
about. Sure.
I've been seeing someone recently.
I've heard. Mentioned. So the scuttlebutt says. I mean, you said
I am the scuttlebutt. You are. Do not talk about my you're scuttlebutt while I'm
scuttling around
chair.
That chair.
Scuttle. So it's interesting because he is a Scorpio. And once I found out that he was a Scorpio, instantly my thought was like, oh no, this isn't going to work. But the reason that, we joke about it. And I mentioned, he was like, I have to tell you, once I find out you're a Scorpio, like, I have some resistance and, like, past trauma that's showing up because my heart got absolutely dashed, smashed, crashed, squashed by a Scorpio. And he was like, that sounds like astrology prejudice to me. And so I could have gone temper, but instead I breathed and I softened. I did my self-care, like, shut the fuck up, Heinz, like, learn something new. I talk to myself like that. I call myself Heinz. I'm like, Heinz, settle the fuck down and listen. So I listened and we talked about it. And then upon further reflection, I realized that the reason I had encased myself like a dung beetle, you know, or like a wolf trap spider. Like, the reason I had encased myself in that mythology was to keep that Scorpio's equal bad is because of that one person. So that is some baggage that I kept picking back up over the years to keep me safe from that immense heartbreak. So now I'm in a place to look at and be like, hey, and I, you know, hey, great. It's not Scorpio. It's that person. You attributed it to Scorpio. This man, this current man, is not that man. So let him be who he is.
I think that I also don't necessarily fall into the philosopher's trap of unless I can back up this vocabulary we're using with arguments and say, these are the facts, then I can't make use of that. That in improvisation, we're constantly making, you know, I'm not a frog. We're being goofy about.
You'd be a great frog, so, I think.
And actually, we would talk when I was a little kid about our star signs. I mean, I don't know anything more about it than that, but I know that I'm a Leo. And so there was another, a different ex-girlfriend that in college that she was also a Leo. And we did butt heads. Sure. We were both too strong-willed. And I characterized it to myself a little like that, so that it's the kind of thing that even though I don't think, you know, everybody born in that month is probably going to be similarly strong-willed or something, it was a good metaphor to capture what was going on, and it was a thing to play with.
I think there are elements of truth in it. I think of it in terms of like nutrition. You don't just drink water. You also protein, vegetables, you move, you stretch. Like there's so many different pieces to it. So I don't think astrology is an end all be all, but I think it gives like unique evidence. Like finding out that you are a Leo, I see that. That makes sense. And I am an Aries, and Aries and Leo tend to work very well in just the setting we're in right now, because we're both strong, fiery, passionate, opinionated people. But our fires work well together, you know, like one isn't muting the other or inflaring another. Like we are, Leos and Aries are known for being great business partners.
Now, does it matter that I'm also born in the year of the pig, right? Is Chinese zodiac?
Probably. Just as I don't good? Know. Probably.
I don't have anything associated with those other than when I would go to the Chinese restaurant, it would be on the menu. Oh, like, oh, you're 71. Okay. Year of the pig.
I just think it's fun to be curious, right? It's fun to realize how small we are. Like just thinking in terms of the full supermoon was yesterday. I've trained myself to be very sensitive to these kind of like psychic stimuli. Like it's a skill that I have. And when I practice it, I feel powerful and I feel good. So the moon really was like affecting me. It had really like powerful energy and I was feeling really like drained and introspective. And thinking for anyone who's a skeptic is like, look how the moon controls the tide and different animals and like mating and stuff. Like the stars and the moons and the planets, like we're just spinning around in dark, you know, this universe, like everything has an effect on everything else.
Well, I feel like didn't we touch on in your very first appearance with us with Bill, phrenology? Do you remember?
We touched on phrenology, but I am familiar with phrenology.
Okay. We talked about something about how
you have a good memory.
Your inner glow, your outer appearance can reflect your inner glow, your inner something.
Sure.
Which, of course, like most of these things, it's true in some sense. You know, that if you're feeling good, you're probably going to, maybe you'll have shinier skin. But to use that as, there's actually a section in Hegel's Phenomenology. So one of the most important philosophy books, the most interesting philosophy books, the ones I've spent the most time with, there's a section on phrenology because he was at the point where he thought literally the shape of your skull could say something about what your personality was and things. And I just dismissed that the same way that I would dismiss astrology or any sort of religious mystical hokum of that sort. That, you know, that's... Not that, you know, you show me some proof of something or again, proof is situational. If you just want to, you know, convince me that what is your sign again?
Aries.
You're Aries. If you want to just convince me that, oh yeah, we let's characterize the fact that we're getting along and doing a business thing together as Aries and Leos work well together, that like, there's no harm in my accepting that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I'm like, oh, that's lovely, right? But to go back to what you're saying about, you know, phrenology, which is definitely proven to be a hoax, but there are like, there's some like elements of truth in it, just in terms of reflexology. Are you familiar with reflexology?
Remind me. I know the term.
I would love to. There are different points in the feet that connect to different organs, glands, and muscles. So that by massaging, putting pressure on these different points in the feet, you're able to release tension in your neck, to improve digestion. And I've gotten reflexology before, and I've definitely felt the positive impacts. So it's also the same to be said for acupuncture. There was a time in my life.
I thought you were going that way.
We're in alignment because we're in Aries and a Leo, everybody. My first semester back from college, I was having awful night terrors and I was having the worst panic attacks. Like, I remember I woke up from a nap and I went down into the kitchen sobbing, and my parents were like, "What is going on?" And I was like, "I need help." So my mom booked me a couple acupuncture treatments, and the nightmares and the panic attacks stopped.
I've heard other people say good things about it.
But it's all your buy-in into it as well. Right.
Right.
It has medicinal benefits. But if these medicinal benefits are like, I'm coming at you with the healing, and you're like, fuck you, healing, then the healing can't come to you. But if you're open-hearted and open-minded to be like, maybe this will help with my anxiety, then it can meet you. But that's a philosophy I choose to believe in, that, you know, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can be like transmuted. But like, so if you're open to it, then you can receive it. But if you're not, then you won't.
Well, so, right. One of the things, the topic that I wrote down when I had to give a title for this Zoom call had to do with self-help, which I pitched you. Because our last episode, second Seth, I will call him, because we had Seth Paskin on
second
first.
Seth. Our second set of Seth.
Was pitching. I felt like I was being very, like I was having to be the grumbly. Like, I purposely don't get on guests to my shows who I'm going to feel like I have to argue with, because that's just not fun. It's not fun for me. It's not fun to listen to. And he was just so sure of himself and coming in so strong and making these generalizations like, tradition is crap. All tradition is bad. Like, which, of course, you know, consider both sides. And in some cases, it's great that we have the guidance of past generations. I wouldn't just throw that away. But, you know, I don't know if it's interesting to have it's just so obvious, the pros and cons.
I don't think he was saying all tradition is bad. I don't believe.
I mean,
I see what you're saying.
Yes, he was coming out very strong, as if, you know, it's the nature of a podcast. And, you know, I asked, tell us about this musing thing that you do. So, of course, he's going to come out and sort of do his sales pitch. And like, yes, I know this sounds weird and different, but you're going to see as I give you examples that this is actually all very natural and things that you would agree with. But in the moment, I felt like I had to be Mr. Grumpy Pants. And I was trying to then use that afterwards. Not because I want to investigate musing more. There's a point, I guess, so Wes, my co-host on the Partially Examined Life, is a professional therapist. And he had told me, between all these different kinds of therapy that there are, just talking to somebody, like, that's most of the benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that goes with with what you were saying about healing sort of stuff. Like, just doing something to try to get yourself to feel better and trying things. Like, it's not that, oh, this thing has the magic button. Oh, if I now that I know astrology, everybody should learn astrology, and then they're going to feel better about it. And that's how I feel about any sort of like, here's my self-help system. Like, your self-help system, I say without really any strong argument, but my suspicion is it's not going to be any better than other things. The point is, you're doing something. Just like in therapy, you're talking to somebody. So like, yes, I love the fact that our two guests ago, he's a philosophical therapist, and we got musing. We have all these different ways that you could talk to people and not have to complain about your ex-girlfriend to your current girlfriend.
Correct. Not of my wife. No, I feel like it's all about, because curiosity is a currency. I speak frequently in terms of high and low vibration because emotions are vibrational. Choosing curiosity is a higher vibration than judgment. So you have to earn your way up the scale to like optimism, curiosity, kindness, questioning, you know. So I feel like curiosity is higher on the scale than like, nah, you're wrong. That's not true. You're wrong. So I think what I'm hearing you say and what I'm gleaning, you know, it's important to be curious, right? It's important to be open to new ideologies and philosophies, because that one might not stick with you, right? Like, you might not give a fuck about reflexology, but because you went down that journey of getting a little foot massage, now you're like, Maybe I should try more lemon water so that I can introduce more antioxidants and detox into my intestines.
So I'm curious, as an amphibian, what sort of strategies do you use to lower stress?
Well, sometimes I just like to free float. Sometimes I like to just tuck my fins in and let the bubbles take me willy-nilly.
Now, as a reptile, I'm not able to do that because I need air more consistently, even though I like being near the water.
Well, here's the thing. When you're in, you know, because I'm a pretty small suckerfish, you know, I'm a little guy. So it's easy for me to let myself go. You have a little bit more mass, and I'm not fat shaming. I'm just saying that you are a larger species than I am. When you're floating, right? When you just let the go, right? You can always stop. And you can always, you know, stop relaxing. And then you can pop up for air. You're capable of doing that. You're a very capable frog. It's one of the reasons why you're my best friend.
Yeah, yeah. People keep calling me that, but I'm actually a toad. I'm a reptile.
Oh my God, I'm
not an amphibian.
I'm an asshole. I'm a three-celled organism.
That's exactly the issue that I was having. And but I appreciate your candor, and I really feel like your point of view is quite tasty, and so I'm going to ingest it along with you.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Here, do you want me to spit some of your skin cells into your mouth for you?
Yes. Go ahead. Crawl. Chomp, chomp,
oh,
chomp.
Oh, it's nice in here. Oh, no! That tickles!
And the chomping commences.
And you ate me.
Yeah.
What did
we
learn here today, kids?
don't indulge others' curiosity, because if they like what you do, they're going to take it over for themselves. You should guard your light under a bushel. You should never show it to anybody.
I believe it's the female anglerfish that does this. When it is time, lots of animal facts, y'all, today. You're welcome. When the female anglerfish meets another male, she absorbs his testicle. She absorbs him into her and then keeps his gonads and then can choose to...
Useful?
Create progeny, right? You don't know where you lost them. They're part of you. And then can just like choose to make progeny whenever she wants. So that's what I thought of right there. Useful.
And that is the secret. You know, if you read my new book about absorbing others' sexual organs so that you have the power, you don't need them going forward. I mean, so yeah, since 69.
Then you don't need to worry about what can I talk about with my significant other. You've absorbed them. You can talk about anything you want because you are the hive.
You could just go masturbate on stage and nobody's going to yell at you.
No one's going to yell at you because you're not masturbating because they are a part of you. So it is actually a scene. Wow. I love what we've discovered that we do. Like near the end, we organically do this reincorporation, callback, mashup, tie it up in a bow. And I hope it's satisfying to listen to because it's very satisfying to discover and like ping, ping, ping back and forth.
Well, that is that gives me permission to feel like we should stop. And so so I will just give the URL again, philosophyimprov.com. I will again point folks to patreon.com/philosophyimprov. There might be extra bonus talking there. You don't know. You don't know until you go look. Definitely it'll be an ad-free experience. And as I think I announced on one of the last ones I posted, because you are underpaid now, Mary, and the more people sign up there, the more money will go to Mary. So if you like Mary...
Thank you for supporting me and my and Trader Joe's groceries, which is the only place where $50 still means something.
All right. So long, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bankrupt. Philosophy versus Improv is a partially examined life podcast. Learn more at philosophyimprov.com and support the effort at patreon.com/philosophyimprov.